This is the Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. Miho Kinnis is here, and we're going to hear her own poetry and translation from Japanese poetry. And first of all, here's Miho with an opening poem.
A singing stone. The first time I heard the stone, it was dark. I turned the light on, it went quiet. The stone on the kitchen counter, one of the plethora of things my wife keeps bringing home. Today, she returned salty from the beach with a pink dotted shell. And I heard clearly, I wish I had been your lover or mother. My wife, with a keener hearing, didn't seem to notice. Instead, she said, I must be bothered by something, because I turned water on a bit too hard. It was splashing the sink edge, but she didn't mention the sound I was making to dice a piece of ham, much louder and larger than usual. These days, I hear it more often. The voice is becoming familiar. Thank you.
This is the voice of Miho Kinnis. I'm Grace Cavalieri, and this is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. And that is such a mysterious poem, Miho. Do you believe that I do, that the earth is alive, Mother Earth is alive? Then do you believe that everything on earth is living?
Oh, I think so. You know, every living creature, we think animals, plants, but not only that, minerals, water, air, everything has something. I don't know if I'll call it a life, but yes.
I think that is so beautiful, to have a stone which is inert and to give it song. It is a very, it is the very definition of poetry.
And thank you very much.
Just talk a little bit more about that, what that poem means to you. Do you like the poem?
This is rather a recent poem. And actually, this is the first poem I ever written in man's voice, husband's voice. You know, when I was about 10, my mother and I were talking about reincarnation. And I know I was 10 because that was the year Mishima died. You know, he killed himself, Mishima Yukio. And then we were talking about reincarnation. She said, no matter what we may reincarnate into, you know, any animal or human, we will always be female. I just remember that. And maybe, you know, I thought I would just embrace my womanhood when I was 10. So I had never written in men's voice, but I feel kind of free by doing this. So that's kind of significant to me.
That is very interesting. And the speaker comes in with the dicing of the ham. Why did you bring the speaker into the poem like that?
Well, partly because I do not eat ham. I'm a vegetarian. So, but also, you know, it's just anything was fine. But because that's something I do not eat, but a lot of men do. So maybe that was the only reason.
Oh, that's interesting. So you've got the male, you've got the mere persona in there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have quite a wonderful career, and you're published in America, in Asia, and in Europe. And you have two books, two poetry collections, Today, Fish Only, and Move Over Bird. I like that. Both from Math Paper Press. And I think your background is really something we want to hear about. You've written in so many journals and anthologies across so many continents, and you received your master's, your MFA, Master's of Fine Arts in Poetry from the City University of Hong Kong. So later on, we're going to hear what it was like to live in China. And right now, though, we want to have you all of our own to hear more of your poetry. Now, I have two poems I'm looking at, both called Bones. One's a translation, and the other's a totally different poem, right?
Right. Yes, they are. They are different.
Very different. I for a moment thought that one was a translation of the other, but no way. So read them both to us and set them both up. Miho Kinnis.
Yes, okay. So the first bones I am going to read is written by a poet by Nakahara Chuya. He lived in the early 20th century. I really like this poet, and about 20 years ago, I wanted to become a literary translator. Not the poet, but literary translator. And so I was learning English. Well, I mean, I've been speaking English for quite a long time. But anyway, I was taking some writing classes. And my teacher, Allegra Wong, told me, Miho, if you want to translate poetry, you have to become a poet. So I said, okay, I'll do that. So that's how I started writing creatively. But anyway, here is the poem by Nakahara Chuya. He died quite young. You know, he was born 1907, died 1937. He died at the age of 30. And I'm going to mix a little Japanese with it. Well, well, here are my bones, torn out of the tired, filthy flesh. Washed white by indifferent rains, they stick out. Hora, hora. これが僕の骨だ。They don't shine brightly. They are simply without a good reason, absorbing the rain and is blown by the wind. The sky reflects to a degree. 雨を吸収して風に吹かれて幾分空を反映する。When I was alive, the bones had sat in a busy canteen. With me ate a bowl of soup of mitsuba greens. Isn't that funny?Well, well, here are my bones. Am I looking? That's strange. Was my mind left behind? Didn't I come back to look at the bones? Who's that? Standing by the withered grass on the side of the stream in my hometown. Is that me? Watching. The bones standing at about the height of a notice board, pointing.
That is so powerful. That is so beautiful. The bones at the end are pointing. And your own poem is very different, but let's hear that one.
Okay. So these are called bones. I was going to add two lines to it because my mother passed away recently. So I wrote lines, but I cannot read it without crying. So I am not going to include my mother in it.
Thank you.
Okay, bones. Grandfather forgot the way home, carrying grandmother in a wisteria purple urn. Father walked swaying side to side, holding grandfather in a blue urn. Brother stood straight like an electric pole with father in a sage urn.All have become clean white bones, broken coral, washed up by the waves. When our urn is set down, the bones clink like the kots, kots sound of high heel shoes. On a cold night with the big moon, on such a night, a piece might fall on the frozen highway, bounce, bounce, until...The new bones settle in the narrow chamber under the granite tombstone.
Oh, Miho, there is such a tone to your work. It is so rich with serenity and acceptance. And I feel the pain. I do feel the pain. And in the translated poem, there was also pain, but it was a lot more caustic.Bones sticking out, making a statement after death. Yours is much more contemplative and meditative and, I would say, interior. But you sure learned how to be a poet to be a translator. I'll say that. You are a real poet. You know, I want them to know that you have been so active as an instructor teaching translations.You organized a community bookshop in South Carolina. It's called an island bookshelf. You have been involved with the Empty Concrete House, which is co-translation of poetry by Japanese Tanaka. And that is going to be a forthcoming book, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
The plan.
What I like about your poems, you sent 10 poems to me because I wanted to see what you thought were interesting to you. And they came to be a sequence. They looked like a Japanese sequence when I looked at all 10 together, although they're all disparate. Did you mean that to happen, to be a sequence?
I was trying to follow kind of my lifeline, where I was and when I started through today. So
I see. But we will go to, let's go to the food one, because I think that has so much history in a small lines.
So this is a
That's part of two.
Yes, that is a part of a longer sequence. And I wrote a lot about food. So there's a section. And this is Haibun, sort of. Haibun.
Oh, can you tell what Haibun is?
Yes, I have more poetry like lines and the regular prose mixed up. So if you can see it on the paper, you'll see the indented section and three lines, and then go back to a paragraph. I tried to read it a little differently so that you can tell the difference. Okay, on food. My parents loved eating. Husband and wife order pork cutlet with new cabbage on the side, getting their dentures ready. Those of us born in Japan after 1955 do not understand voracious appetite of previous generation. Such a demarcation of hunger exists everywhere. Our mothers and fathers worked hard to eat and for us to eat better. The memory of shortage, however, never leaves them. The elderly beamed at empty store shelves after tsunami, just like when we were young. My father sipped his tea and watched me attack a large piece of rice cracker. He was happy that I enjoyed his favorite snack, then already out of reach food for him. He was moving his lower jaw with me. The last meal I told him about was udon noodles I had in a hospital cafeteria. It was spring. Three cherry trees in the courtyard were visible from every table. I returned to my father's hospital room. How's the blossom? What did you eat? His room this time was on the fourth floor. Lying down, he looked up at the narrow strip of sky. I left the room later that day. I overheard him asking the nurse whether he could order udon noodles for dinner. The nurse smiled and said, "It may be difficult for you to slurp," and hooked the oxygen mask over his face.
Oh my, that says so very much. There is history in that, and there is so much humanity. Now, I had always thought that the Haibun was a prose piece with a small haiku at the bottom, which was an essence. Now I learned something new today. The Haibun can be a prose piece, then an essence, prose, essence, prose, essence. I love that form. Now, did you change it?
No, I have seen both ways, like a poem first and prose. But also, if you think about the Basho's travelogue to the north, it's a kind of a Haibun, and he keeps on going. It's a sequence, right? There is a prose explanation and his poem, and it just keeps on going. So I think I use that style.
It's becoming known in America, and I see writers beginning to use it because it's very powerful, very powerful. Mm-hmm. And it has so many aesthetic qualities, the indentations and the short haiku. Let us show what short poems are in 3, 4, and 5, because a short poem is not a haiku, but we'll talk about the difference after them.
Okay. So I lived in China. I am Japanese, but I lived in China for 18 years altogether, Hong Kong and Shanghai. So I saw, especially Shanghai, as a foreigner. And, you know, people can tell the difference by looking at me. And I do read the Chinese language a little bit, but I'm still looking at everything as a foreigner. So the liberation, this is at the market. Women gather around the pile of potatoes, elbowing the competition. They grab a potato, examine it through their glasses, above their glasses, weigh them on the train hands, and put them back into the pile, shaking their heads, and pick another and another, as if finding a bride for the eldest son. So, Sakura, this is because being Japanese in China, we are always reminded of the past ugly history. We invaded the country. So normally, I never really had a problem living there, but sometimes you feel it. So Sakura, don't call Yinghua Sakura ever again. The Japanese stole it from us like everything else, told an old man to his grandchildren. The cherry tree let a few petals on the ground as if saying, I don't belong to anybody.
Oh, we must tell them that Sakura means cherry blossoms. That is right, absolutely right. Gorgeous. Yes. I just love that. I don't belong to anybody. Keep going.
Okay. Swimming. So this one also, swimming pool. I used to go to this pool in Shanghai, and then something strange happens all the time. And if you live there, if you know how things work, probably nothing strange. But to me, it was very, very strange. So that's this poem's about. Swimming pool. The receptionist warns, the water temperature is high today. My muscles lose strength. Swimmers fall asleep floating. I hear noises in the shower. Listen, nothing. I stick my head out. A few dialects streak out of the showerhead. The next day, the receptionist apologizes. The water temperature is low today. The water is tinted blue, and my skin turns squid transparent. In the shower, a woman screams in polite Japanese, そのようなことがあるわけはございません。Such a thing cannot be happening. The following sunny day, the receptionist winks. Today, it is for fish only. I am a good swimmer. Caught, rolled up in the fishnet of golden thread.
Such a beautiful couplet at the end. Such a beautiful, it almost is an illustration. But what I like is that you will write about anything. You see the world as material. You see every episode of your life as something worthy of making permanent and burnishing and letting it shine. And this is a quality which I think is from your culture. What did the Chinese culture help to add to your poetry? What do you think, what layer do they add of your observations? Do you think it affected the language at all?
The language probably did. It's because I've learned so much, how much the Japanese culture learned from China. I knew that in my head for a long time because our writing system originally came from China. And, you know, like we say Sakura, many people know the word Sakura, but it's in Hua in Chinese. And you use Zen, you use, for example, bonsai in Japanese word, those are miniature trees, but they all came from China. So, you know, we should be using more Chinese words, maybe, but somehow it's all Japanese. I learned all those things. So, yes, I think my world became larger by living in another country.
Oh, that is, you have such an interesting background. And there's two rich cultures. You have a fascinating history where you have shown us that one culture borrows from another culture.
Mm-hmm.
And you were imbued with both cultures, which has just made such a richness in your poetry. But the poem I am fascinated with is Sudoku, which is a game I could never play. You have to explain the game. It is an intellectual puzzle, really. And this fascinating poem that has come out of it, which I see as a poem of being and non-being. I see a very Buddhist Zen poem in this. First of all, tell us what Sudoku is, and then read us the poem.
Okay.
I want to remind everyone that I'm talking to Miho Kinas.
Right. So Sudoku is a number game. You will see it in some newspapers or airline magazines. And then there are squares with nine little squares inside and then nine big squares all around it. You're supposed to fill them with a certain number, one through nine, each one of them. So it's a puzzle. And Sudoku is a Japanese word. It's made up word, but it's a Japanese word. And then I just remembered, I was thinking about Sudoku, and there are so many other words that sound like Sudoku, rhyme with Sudoku, sort of. Kodoku is loneliness. Sokotsu is carelessness. Dotoku is morality. Kokotsu is ecstasy. And kudoku is seduction. So I was playing with it, and I kind of made that into a little poem. So I'm going to read that. Sudoku, a solution in the box, Sudoku. No solution in the box, Kodoku. Nobody in the house. Slopped out of the box, Sokotsu. Errors are never planned. Locked in the box, Dotoku, locked in the house of judgment. Carried away to a different place, Kokotsu, the expectation fills me. Dream, seduce and snatch, Kudoku, they would say anything.
Why do I love that one so much? Because you take such risks, Miho. You are totally brave. You are unafraid. You do not care. You just say, this is an original poem, and it's something I've never seen before. So you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 stanzas of very short lines, tercets. And then in the 2nd, 3rd, 4th, 5th, and 6th stanzas, you have an editorial comment that's extended. And what a wonderful, I wish everyone could see this on the page. For instance, the 2nd stanza, no solution in the box, Kodoku. And Kodoku. Then she has an, say it again.
Kodoku.
Kodoku. Then she has an extension, nobody in the house. So she makes a plausible, rational editorial comment from a little tiny three-line tercet and a play on all these words. Just tell us the words again. That and each stanza. Just say
okay. So kodoku, loneliness. Sokotsu, carelessness. Dotoku, morality. Kokotsu, ecstasy. Kudoku, seduction.
Beautiful. Just beautiful. Tell me your spiritual practice in writing. Writing is a spiritual practice, and I'm getting that from your work. How is it that you combine that with your poetry?
It is difficult to explain, but like when you're swimming, I try not to think about anything. You could think about something, but I swim a lot. And it's just swimming, and clean your mind. And then, you know, something good happens from it. Poetry, too, I do need to sit down. And I don't know, think about it, start typing, start jotting, and then something happens, right? It's a little bit of an epiphany anyway. I have to wait for it, and I have to call that in, but it's just, is it a mind practice? Is it not for you?
What I love is, and with you today, I'm reminded of this, is how the poem is the soul of the person. No one sounds like you. No one could copy your voice. And then when I teach, I say one thing, just be more like yourself than ever. Just be more as much of yourself as you can be, and the poem will come. And you are absolutely unique and beautiful, and no one writes like you do. Now, tell us what you think about what a haiku is. What do you think a haiku is?
Anyway, I have been thinking too much about haiku. So, you know, this has a long history, and how this form is translated into so many different cultures and languages. So I just think it's a box. It's a form that does not belong to anybody. We can all, you know, put something in the box and see how it looks. That's what haiku is. It's small enough to see it. One look.
That's interesting. But what is the difference between a haiku then and a short poem?
I think haiku, really, I try to follow the form. That's, you know, it's 575 in Japanese, and it could be that syllables in English, but it does not have to be, right, as you know. But haiku, I try to follow, in my mind, in the Japanese form, or in English, it's three lines, and there are certain combination how you use the lines. So sometimes, though, I write, say, 10 lines and then condense them into haiku intentionally. Then what should I get rid of? And I try to follow my ideal form of haiku, sort of. But sorry, it's kind of hard to explain.
No, you're making it as clear as Basho's pond. It's very clear to me. I try to work with the three lines in themselves, and it's very hard. And now I'm going to try your method of consolidating the larger into the smaller. But do you believe there should be an image that ramifies, that the haiku must have an image, a sight, mm-hmm. a sound, a smell?
Because I'm very visual, I normally have a thing in it, an item, an object. However, sometimes, like in case of this Sudoku, if I try to make this into a haiku, it could be abstract. So in that sense, I may lose something. But to me, Chinese character is also an image, but it is not to the reader. So, you know, you may not have the image, which I have. So, No, I don't think it's really a requirement, but actually images help every poet, right?
Absolutely. Now, with our Zen master, he says that we're moving away from 575. He says that the Japanese have 18 syllables. Is that correct?
We have, well, you know, because so many people are writing haiku for so many years, everything was tried, I think. There was some modern poet like Santoka or Hosai, they wrote one-liner and has nothing to do with 575. And some people go a little bit over that, some people a little below that. So everything has been tried. But nowadays, it seems people sticking to 575 fairly diligently.
This is
it's just a phase.
It is very, very enlightening to me. And nothing, I call haiku the Pilates of poetry. I think it's the hardest form of all poems because it has to be crystalline. It has to have an idea, and it has to have the first line, and then the second line should be about the first line. It's very, very intense. So let us go to, in your sequence, to number, I think that this number 8 is about haiku.
Yes. Kitchen haiku, right.
Kitchen haiku. Now I'm going to start doing that.
So actually, you know, there was a time in history, haiku written by women were all called kitchen haiku. It doesn't matter what the subject was. It's written by women. That was a kitchen haiku.
Wow.
So I was kind of making fun of it. And but anyway, I wrote my kitchen haiku. It's really about kitchen. Yes. Spilled ground coffee. Dancing in the morning sun, single origin, Colombia. Watermelon rinds for pickles, something people reminisce. I'm not starting a rumor about turmeric tea. I ensure my stash. Burned bacon. For a few seconds, the dog forgot me. Burned onion ruined curry.
But there's so much in that last one. Say it again.
Burnt onion ruined curry.
Such a tiny observation, such a thing we all know and have practiced and realized. But to make that into haiku transforms it into so much more. It's almost a symbol.
I heard my friend, an Indian gentleman, he said he does not cook at all. His wife does all the work, and he complains, if she burns onion, that's it. So I remember that.
But it could be a symbol of so much that we overdo.
Oh, yes, definitely. It's such a tiny ingredient. And, you know, just one first step that could change everything. Yes.
There you go. One first step that could change everything, as in a poem. Right. Mm-hmm. Yes. So read a spring migration, because that is a longer form for you.
Yes.
And it has a story. Sometimes mm-hmm. your stories are very indirect, but this has a very consequential story which mm-hmm. tracks a right. narrative. So I'd love right. to hear that one.
Yes. Well, when I moved to South Carolina, that's where I live now, I did not know anybody. I didn't know anybody. I just didn't know what to do. So I decided to learn birds. There are so many beautiful birds here. So the birds show up in this poem. Spring migration. Because you felt better after the blood test, we drove downtown. Turning down Liberty, we waited for the pedestrians to cross. Above, birds fluttered from a palmetto to a palmetto, pecking fermenting fruit. The sky, cerulean blue, cedar waxwing keeps passing the fruit as if being chased by a big shadow, taking no chances until one of them swallows. They are chased by life in the air, but sometimes on a sonic pulse, every bird in the flock finds a spot on the branches on the large gum tree, still a bear tree, their constant buzzing calls, the sonar gird, also ceases. Facing northeast, they stay still, still. I count my heartbeats how much longer. The tree was too tall for me to catch their colors, and we have to move on. But as I shifted in my seat, I saw with my mind's eye the dashing black around the head, blondish crest, lemon yellow hemmed tail. As the red droplets on their wings melted wax. The details are a disclosure. Each body, one ounce of divination, swinging through the spring sunlight. Tomorrow, after tomorrow, another tomorrow. I turn to you and the sun is on your knuckle on the wheel.
That last line. If I teach poetry, I will use those last two lines to show how the smallest thing is the largest thing. That is just so significant, to look and to see the sun on the knuckle, on the wheel. Such an observation. What does that mean to you? And I love the line, tomorrow after tomorrow, another tomorrow. That is so lyrical and so beautiful. Did that take a long time to write?
I did edit many times, but the basic form did not change over the edits. So my husband does not want me to write about him, So this is pretty much the only one he really shows up as a character. But I was a little bit worried about his health last year. But so that's, you know, after the health scare. So I was watching at his hand.
But his knuckle will be made immortal now, whether he likes it or not. His knuckle is in literature. It's in the great canon of literature. That is very good. In closing, I wish for some more haiku from you. And So I'm going to ask that we go out of the program with Bridal.
Okay. This was, it's dedicated to my daughter, who was married last May. So we took a hiking trip to Shenandoah. Bridal. The sound of twigs leads to a deer drinking from a stream. Losing the thought of a forgotten name in mid-sentence. Fair weather cloud at the eye level, the pinnacle rock. The wind is Lola Ridge's a new washed hand. At night, the sound of stealth animals brushes the night woods. It comes down to chiffon or organza, your wedding dress. Dog runs through the direct song lines between a star and a cricket.
That is the voice of Miho Kinnis, and this is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. The program is produced by Forest Woods Media Productions, post-production by Mike Turpin, MET Studios. We wish to thank the Library of Congress for making the program possible. Funding is provided by the Rivada Foundation, the Sinipit Fund, Avidesha Shani, and Sandy Jackson Cohen. Our engineer is Mike Turpin. I'm Grace Cavalieri.